Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Databook, a Chief Healthcare Executive podcast. My name is Skylar Jeremias, and I'm an assistant editor at CHE. Today, I will be joined by Blair Childs, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs at Premier. We discuss the potential for the Improving Seniors' Timely Access to Care Act, also known as HR 3173, to be signed into law and how it will improve access to care for patients by changing how prior authorizations for prescriptions are done. We also talked about how machine learning and artificial intelligence technologies can help health systems adjust if the bill becomes law, and how they can help automate prior authorizations. So to start us off, Blair, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do at Premier?
Sure. Blair Childs, I oversee communications, public policy, thought leadership. I'm on the executive team of Premier, so I work to help the company succeed.
What are some of the issues that currently exist regarding prior authorizations in Medicare Advantage plans?
Well, you know, it's not just Medicare Advantage. It's prior authorization across the board, but certainly plays out in Medicare Advantage even more so because there's a lot of pressure to maintain cost competitiveness. But the problems that exist with prior authorization, I think many of us as patients have experienced them, that there's delays that we have in getting care. There's a lot of work that goes into, prior authorization process. And it's because, like a lot of things in healthcare, it is a very manual, very backward, not 21st century kind of HIT system that exists. Just to give you a sense of it, 88% of prior authorization is manual, entirely manual or partly manual. So this is faxes and phones, things like that. 94% of this leads to treatment delays of some kind. And then of those treatment delays, 21% of them, people say, have actually caused harm, some kind of harm and hospitalization. So it's caused people to spend more money on healthcare. And then 18% say that it's led to life-threatening events. These are physicians who are being surveyed on this, I should mention. So, and on top of that, physicians and their staff spend on average 16 hours a week dealing with prior authorization. So we have a very backward system that's manual. It's slow. There's a lot of questions in the minds of most healthcare providers that the real intent of prior authorization is to slow the care delivery process down and basically control costs to the benefit of the health plans. The argument by the health plans is that they're trying to enforce evidence-based care and make sure that care is appropriate and cost-effective. So in between those two extremes, there's probably the truth, but that's kind of what's going on. And that's what causes a lot of the conflict that goes on between providers and health plans. And it's all a function of what is a kind of an illogical healthcare system that we have today, where the payer has one set of objectives, the provider has another set of objectives. And that's a consequence of the way payment is done in healthcare. It's very complicated, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's a function of fee-for-service, the way that healthcare providers are paid, and this third-party administered system that we have in healthcare with payers, managing the money, and you have the providers managing the care, and it makes a lot of dysfunction that goes in inefficiency. Prior authorization is a great example of that inefficiency. I mean, I just described things that are potentially harmful for patients, incredibly cumbersome for providers, and literally are just backward. We're talking about 1990s technologies. And it's like, we haven't gotten out of that. This doesn't make any sense, but it's one of the challenges we have in healthcare.
Now, could you briefly explain for our audience what the Improving Seniors Timely Access to Care Act is and how it will impact prior authorizations under Medicare plans if put into law?
Yeah, so this is a bill that's been introduced in the House. And the sponsors of the legislation are Suzanne DelBene from Washington, Democrat, Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania, Republican, Ami Barra, who's a physician from California, and Larry Bouchon, who's also a physician from Indiana. He's a Republican. So it's balanced between Republicans and Democrats. This is an area where there's a lot of bipartisan support is to get something done here. Because we're, I think, just like I described, there's agreement, including with the insurance industry. We need to do something to get this into the modern age. So the bill does five major things. It requires Medicare Advantage plans, which are plans that are offered to Medicare beneficiaries that they can choose to have. So there's traditional Medicare, which is administered by the government, and that's the foundation of the Medicare program. And then you have Medicare Advantage, which are private plans that are offered to seniors that they can purchase that generally have more health coverage and less co-pays and expenses for consumers, for patients. So there's a lot of advantage to Medicare Advantage, but it's privately administered. So the private plans do a lot of things to contain spending because they want to be able to succeed with the program, be profitable. And so they use prior authorization, utilization review, a lot of different things to manage costs and assure that that the evidence is practiced. So the bill does five things. It requires these Medicare Advantage plans to offer, to have electronic prior authorization. So you've got to have it through an electronic portal of some kind or right in the workflow, ideally for physicians. Secondly, it says that HHS, the Secretary of HHS, the Health and Human Services, selects what the items and services are. So whether it's an orthopedic implant or whether it's spine surgery or whether it's something else, they determine what services will be done and sort of the pace of getting those out there and making these electronic. The third thing is it requires that qualified medical personnel review disputed claims that are out there that where the physician doesn't get approval. It requires transparency, fourth thing, on the requirements for these different prior authorization programs. So there's more understanding about what evidence is actually required. And then the fifth thing is that when a consumer moves from one MA plan to another MA plan, they may be in a prior authorization situation. There shouldn't be any delay. There shouldn't be any conflict or problem for a patient in that circumstance. All of this ultimately is going to be to the benefit of the patient because you won't have the delays. You won't have the potential challenges with care that can cause, again, hospitalization or even harm. So those are the five major components of the legislation. It's got a lot of support right out of the gate. Like there's 400 organizations all behind it. There's a number, like it's about 200 members of Congress who've already signed on to as being sponsors of it. So it's got a lot of support, and I expect that we will get to 300 or so co-sponsors of the legislation, which actually then forces it to get to the floor of the House, and presumably because you've already got 300 co-sponsors, and you only need 218 to pass a bill it's going to pass, which then sends it over to the Senate. There's a lot of interest in the Senate. It's not been introduced in the Senate yet. But there's a lot of interest in sponsoring in the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, again, bipartisan. When I look at it, there's Senator Cassidy, who's a physician from Louisiana. There's Senator Marshall, who's also a physician, who's interested in sponsoring it. Senator Thune, those are the Republicans. Then Senator Brown from Ohio and Senator Cortez Masto from Nevada are also very interested in co-sponsoring this and moving this forward. So I think there'll be a lot more support. This didn't get through last year in large part because COVID. It's like, how do you focus on things like this when you've got a pandemic going on? And that's part of why I think this year it's going to be hard for the legislation to actually get passed in this year. But I think in 2022, it has a much better chance just because momentum will get established. We're going to get some of this other legislation that's a higher priority right now, infrastructure and so forth, that are dominating the attention in Washington at the moment.
It seems like this bill could really do a lot for patients with chronic diseases that often require extensive regimens with multiple prescriptions. I mean, waiting around for a prior authorization to be approved sounds like a pretty big challenge for these folks.
Yeah, I think there's no question that all of this can streamline. But I have to tell you, every physician wants to practice evidence-based care. There's just no question of that. They don't want to be challenged on their ability to practice evidence-based care. In the defense of the insurance industry, however, evidence is constantly changing, and it's very hard to keep up. So to the extent that we've got clinical decision support, something that provides information to clinicians to help them be smarter on what the latest evidence is and helps prompt their insights, that's desirable. It's desirable by providers. And we think providers, once they have that information, will act on it because they're very smart people and very capable. So we don't want to have any systems out there that conflict with, you know, making it easy for physicians to be informed to make good decisions. So our whole focus in Premier, and just to understand who Premier is a little bit more, we work with, 80% of the hospitals in the country, health systems, 200,000 non-acute care sites, hundreds of thousands of clinicians, hundreds of thousands. And our whole focus is to help them improve quality and reduce cost.
How will this bill change the way technological advancements such as AI, machine learning, and natural language processing are utilized in healthcare systems?
Unfortunately, in healthcare, oftentimes to get things done, to move things through the process, it requires government action. A lot of us don't like the fact that you have to have government involved in these things, because frankly, whenever government passes laws, it often can have unanticipated consequences that aren't always helpful. So a lot of us who've been working on this think hard and long about how do we make sure that this isn't going to have some adverse impact. But unfortunately, because there's a sort of a mixed set of incentives, if you think about it, for the payer, if the payer can delay care, they can actually hold money longer and make potentially more money. So they need to be incentivized in some cases to move things along. And because our system has been so backward in the use of technology, you need to prompt it. It's unfortunate, but it's a reality. So legislating this is the way we can accelerate the movement towards an electronic, more sophisticated, more advanced healthcare system that will benefit patients, benefit providers, and ultimately lower the cost of care overall. That's what we all want. The problem is there's a lot of competing in misaligned incentives in healthcare that don't exist anywhere else in our economy, but they do in healthcare because of a lot of just historic purposes that have, the system was designed in 1965 by government with Medicare and Medicaid, and it hasn't changed a lot since then. And it's a very backward system in many ways, where providers aren't fully accountable for care. Payers are more accountable for the cost. It's kind of crazy. It doesn't exist anywhere else in our economy. And that's why change is hard, because of it, the misaligned incentives. So we work hard to try to fix that.
How will having better access to this technology improve conditions for payers and physicians?
Yeah, I just think, a couple of studies that have been done here that we could save $500 million annually to start with. And I think it would be a lot more than that as we become more sophisticated. The amount of time that's wasted because of this. We think there could be a significant improvement in people's time. In fact, one study was done and found that 70% improvement in time that people have, which means ultimately that you have more time for patient care. And that's what physicians want. It's what clinicians all want. It's what ultimately we all want as a society. When you get back to the misaligned incentives in healthcare today, in some cases, you know, you could argue that the payers aren't as incentivized to have people spend more time caring for patients. They'd rather not have the patients there and have to pay for it. And, you know, so it's a little nutty. And I'm not attributing that statement to payers. So I think all of them mostly want this to be the right, they have the right outcomes, but there are mixed incentives is the point I'm trying to make. And so ultimately patients will be happier because they don't get delayed. They don't go to a doctor and then have to go back to the doctor again and have to go back to getting the care that they want. It ultimately will, as I said, lead to more sophisticated use of evidence. We all want that. And ultimately bring down the cost of care. And so that is the ideal outcome. And this legislation helps prompt those, basically require payers to do this and require physicians to move forward on this effectively. And this will accelerate the movement. And we've got to accelerate this because our system is too backward today.
And also, how will this technology influence the patient experience when receiving healthcare?
Well, I'm tired of going to the physician and being told I have to come back just because something has to be approved. And it's happened to me, and it's probably happened to most people who are listening to this program. And so from a patient experience vantage point, not to mention the fact that I've had to listen to the cussing of a physician, a clinician or two, but I can tell you that this gets clinicians blood boiling about as much as anything. And nobody wants to be challenged. And that's why, again, ultimately you really want the clinician to be better informed through technology so they make the best decisions as opposed to feeling like they've got Big Brother looking over their shoulder who may have mixed set of incentives that's driving their behavior.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Databook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter @ChiefHealthExec and on LinkedIn and Facebook. Until next time, I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias.